And so my third day out of the academy, third day on the street, I ended up shooting and killing a guy that had 15 different felony arrests, multiple drug arrests, robberies, and now had killed two people.
Welcome back, viewers, watchers, listeners. I'm your host, Tyler Owen.
And Clint McNear.
Welcome back.
Thanks. You did a great job.
Well, thank you. I had to seek counseling. In fact, we got a counselor on today that we're going to talk about. But yeah, I missed you.
We've done about 70 episodes together, and every once in a while, if I'm not available, he has to do an episode alone, and I don't get to hear the end of it.
No, I was, it's just not the same. As in the word of James Babb, the chemistry between us is special. Is exactly what Babb said. That's what he said, and I quote, that's what Babb told me.
And Babb's knows special.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's awesome. That means a lot coming from him. He knows special.
How you been?
I'm good, man. I just whipped a case of the flu, and I'm back on my feet like Rocky Balboa.
You got over it. You got the Theraflu? Is that what they prescribed you?
Tamiflu is the prescription one, yep. It turned me around. How's the Owen family?
We're doing good. You know, I just got back from...
If it's more than one Owen, it's Owens, isn't it?
No, it's not Owens. We're not sausages just yet, but we've been busy. Janet had to take care of the kids. For those that don't know, my wife's not a morning person. So when I do travel and she's...
That's a hell of a deal coming from a guy that gets up at 4 a.m.
Yeah. I have to wake her up every morning, which is not a bad thing. I love seeing a beautiful woman laying in my bed every morning who I call my wife. It's been an honor for me to do that for 20-something years now, my high school sweetheart. But nonetheless, I got to go to Eagle Pass with Executive Director Kevin Lawrence and John Bellini and John Wilkerson. So when I got home last night, she was very, very anxious for me to get home, get settled in, get back to the routine. So I sensed, because I'm her husband and just a great guy, but the reality is that I got to take the kids to school this morning. She got to sleep in a little bit. So.
Oh, there you go. The truth always comes out.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, we're all doing good. I'm back in Wimberley, Texas now. I'm away from the border.
Back in God's country.
I'm back in God's country. So who you got on today?
We've got a forny friend of mine, Nick Edwards. Welcome on, bud.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Are you a fighting jackrabbit?
Yes, sir. Well, I didn't grow up as a jackrabbit, but I've been there long enough. I count myself as a jackrabbit.
They've accepted you in. Well, yes, good. Sir. That's awesome.
It's like the mob, man. I mean, once you're in, once you're a made jackrabbit, you're in.
I understand.
You get jumped in, jumped out.
Bleed in, blood out, right. Whatever they do it. The gang, the forny gang.
Nick's on. We got a cool story you're going to get to hear. I think you're going to like. And I think there's several aspects I think the listeners will like.
What I liked about it is what you were talking about, how y'all met, and then the impact that you've had on today's youth. And I'm sure we're going to jump into that later on. But you were telling us about the Brunch Brothers, the Brunch?
Brotherhood Brunch.
That's so impactful, especially right now with the youth, especially with your history being a former cop. But thank you, because I've got small kids. So I've got an 8 and 11-year-old, and, for somebody to take the time out of their day to do that on a weekend, weeknight, it takes a lot. So from one dad to, I'm assuming you got kids.
Three daughters.
So, yeah, from one dad to another, thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. It really has been a lot of fun just to be a part of this football team. I've been doing mentorship for, 6 years now. And just being a part of these young men's lives and just going, man, we need as many good men in their life as they can possibly get.
You're probably training your future son-in-law. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I have thought about it. Yes, I have. And then thinking, okay, not you. Maybe you.
Yeah, you may make the cut.
But there's never been a more important time, and I guess people have always said that through the decades. To me, there's never been a more important time for young men to need to have some positive male influences. Yep. In their life, other than a video game or BS on TV or whatever, a human role model standing in front of them, practicing what to preach.
I agree.
We like to just start up episode off of who in the heck is Nick? Where'd you grow up? Where were you born? Tell us about growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in Mesquite, which is just east or just west of Forney, between just east of Dallas. Grew up there. My family's actually from there. Played football at North Mesquite and then went off to Hardin-Simmons out in Abilene, played a little college football.
Stallions, or was it that the Stallions?
Absolutely, Mesquite? Stallions. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's what I
Don't
thought.
Don't get confused with the other team.
No, I'm not.
I came into the Forney Jackrabbit family, but I've always been a Stallion.
I got you.
So, all right.
Sorry.
All right.
I'm a big high school football fan.
I didn't know you played college football.
Played 1 year out at Hardin-Simmons.
What position?
Offensive line. Played center.
Really?
Yep. I was a little less fat, a little bit more built back then. So,
But you're not a giant offensive lineman. You must understand leverage and
– all about technique and just giving it your most and making sure that you know more than anybody else on the field.
I was talking to Brock the other day about he's not massive in size compared to a lot of these kids, and I said – one of the best centers Dallas ever had was Mark Stepnoski, who was not a giant, but the man understand technique, leverage, body position, and had one heck of a career and a Pro Bowl career, not as a massive man. That's cool, man.
Yeah,
that's
actually had cool. his poster on my wall.
Really?
That was my hero right there, Mark Stepnoski.
That's cool.
He was a good one.
That's sure. cool.
That's going way back right there.
Yeah.
When the Cowboys could actually win.
Easy.
So Hardin, stop right there. So Hardin-Simmons. What was Nick's growing up like? Pretty low key kid, pretty quiet kid. Mesquite's salty.
Yeah.
Pretty normal childhood growing up.
Yeah, just blue collar, hardworking families. Grew up with guys that, I mean, we played football together from six all the way till graduating high school. And so a bunch of my team, man, I'd just grown up with. We knew their families. Actually met my wife in high school. She went to a different high school in Mesquite. She went off to A&M. I went to Abilene, came back and got married after college. And so just some long-term relationships, and even still with guys that I graduated high school with that are on Mesquite Police Department and still live in that area. And so just long-term relationships and a lot of community there.
What was your degree in?
Actually, church ministry and psychology.
It's two good ones to go probably hand in hand, I'd imagine.
Yeah,
there's what. So, my journey, I've been a pastor, been a police officer, worked for Dallas Police for 7 years, was a pastor again, now work part or do some work in the school district, but also have a life leadership and business coaching. But what I realize is that every field, there's crazy people. So being able to understand that and just know that right off the bat, no matter where you go, there's crazy people everywhere, definitely helps.
Yeah.
Graduated from Abilene. Did you come right back to North Texas?
Yep. Actually moved back to Mesquite, went on staff at a church in Sunnyvale and was there for 4 years. My wife got married, had our first kid, and God just kind of took us on a crazy journey from that point. Really thought God was going to open up some doors for us to go different places and pastor in different places. And God had different plans. You know, we there's times that we think we have a plan of what God's going to do in our life, and it doesn't always go according to our plan. It was His perfect plan. And so we ended up working part-time job to part-time job. My father-in-law was a Dallas police officer, so I was badge 8932. He was 3982.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
And his dad was badge 144 for Dallas Police Department.
Oh, wow. That goes way back.
Yeah, way back there.
And so what transition, get out of college, doing some ministry, pastoring work in Sunnyvale, and as you said, you thought you were going left and turns out God was going to make you turn right. That's a pretty big jump from pastoring to DPD. How'd that evolve?
Well, it was not an easy journey. I actually struggled a lot during that time, struggled with my faith. What do I believe about God? What do I believe about who God is? Can I trust God? Just went through a season of depression, some addiction issues, really struggling in my home of who I was. God, what can I believe about you? What do you have for me? And I've been going through all this process, believing that you had something for me, and now I'm working part-time job to part-time job, and it's not working out. My father-in-law says, hey, Dallas is hiring and you need a good job. It sounds like a good fit. Sounds like a good father-in-law thing to say right there, isn't it? And so I ended up interviewing for Mesquite and for Dallas. And one of the guys I was working for at the time, who was a friend of my dad's, told Mesquite I was a thief and had been stealing from his company, had been lying. And Mesquite said, hey, you're no longer a candidate here. And I just remember going, God, I don't have a clue what you want from me. why am I in this position? I've done everything right. Now I have this guy lying against me when I'm just trying to get a job.
Yeah.
And so just struggling with that, ended up, my dad had a conversation with the guy, probably would never go be good on record of what that conversation looked like and what that conversation sounded like, but ended up going to work for Dallas.
What year was that?
06.
DPD Academies, how long back then?
32 weeks.
Dang.
Yeah, that's long.
A long time.
What was Academy like back then? There's DPD runs a pretty good Academy, pretty tough Academy.
Yeah, my Academy class was really good. We had guys in there. Actually, in my Academy class, I had a guy on my left that actually became my partner. He did 3 tours in Iraq. He was a Marine. The guy on my right was a Marine. You know, Marines are real sensitive guys.
We are very sensitive.
Very sensitive guys. And so, but developed long-term relationship with those guys. The guy on my left became my partner. The guy on my right, I ended up marrying him and his wife, baptized his children.
Oh, cool.
And so just what God had a bigger story going on than what I could see at that moment. And so it was really good.
How many in your class do you remember?
44, I think is what graduated. I think there's like 6 left.
Wow.
That still work there.
Wow.
And none of those that work there still, I would have ever thought they lasted that long.
Dang.
Damn.
Hmm. Graduated, hit patrol, FTO phase. Where'd you go?
Worked Central, which was East Dallas. And it was, man, I was excited about it. Before going to the academy, I didn't know really what to expect, what was going on. You know, you're just trying to learn. I was never a great student, but I always wanted to learn. I always wanted to grow. I always wanted to get better. And getting assigned to Central, I was excited about that. Go in, meet my training officer. He was an awesome guy. He was great at writing reports. He said, nothing else matters if you can't write it. Yeah. And so just started off, man, right from the beginning, you got to be able to know how to write. So those first couple of days, just getting to know him was great. I ended up doing training at Central before going to Southeast.
Who's your first training officer, if you want to give him a shout out or remember his name?
Yeah, Martin Rodriguez.
Martin Rodriguez.
He's the only trainer I remember.
Oh, there you go.
Well, actually, I do remember another one, but he got arrested. So that's a whole different story for a whole different day.
but I take it he wasn't, because for the FTOs out there that we have listening, some can be, let's just face it, law enforcement can be kind of a hazing portion of that phase in their law enforcement career. And I've always hated that and always been against that. Obviously, that wasn't the case with Rodriguez. He wanted you to be a part of the family. And basically like the big brother aspect.
Absolutely. He was great at that. He wanted to make sure he protected you, make sure he put you in good positions, made sure you knew how things worked. He probably wasn't the best tactical officer, but he was the officer who made sure you knew how to do everything that you needed to do, knew how to work the system, knew who to go to for what, and make sure that you could write the report that really covered your butt.
So kind of doing pastoring work, father-in-law, Vaughn tells you that law enforcement career would be an interest for you to head towards. Had you ever had an interest in law enforcement prior to that, or?
Yeah. So before going into ministry and just really thinking that's what God had called me to, I really thought I'd do one of two things. I'd either be an FBI sniper. That's really being a long range shooter. I thought I could do that, or be a coach. I do have a long range rifle now and really like shooting long range. And now I do coaching, whether it's coaching leaders, coaching business owners, coaching different organizations, or even coaching kids on the field.
Oh, cool. Had you been around your father-in-law a lot? So when you were about to hit the street day one out of FTO, did you have a pretty good idea of what you were undertaking? And
no, not from my father-in-law is a incredibly godly, wise man. I've never seen him go high. I've never seen him go low. He is just even keel. I mean, just most steady man I've ever met in my life. And so talking about what that meant to be on the street, I don't know if we had those conversations, but I knew that if I got in a situation, I could call him and he would have the answer.
Where did he work at during that time?
He worked for pawn shop at that point.
Your father-in-law?
As a pawn shop detective.
Okay.
So pawn shop. Detail, yeah, trying to monitor pawn shops and locate stolen property.
I got you.
So you hit street full of urine and vinegar, ready to go.
Absolutely.
Catch bad guys. Tell us about how day one and first week of FTO goes.
So I remember.
How old were you?
Oh gosh, now you're going to make me do some math. 27.
Okay.
Something like that. 27, 28. I remember in the academy, actually won Top Gun pistol in my class. I'd never shot a pistol before being in the academy. Ended up winning Top Gun and getting to those last couple of weeks and going, some of the guys that were in the military had different experiences. So you never know how you're going to respond when you get in a situation. And I just remember thinking, yes, I do. I know what I'm going to do. I know what it's going to take because I'm going home to my wife and daughter. Nothing's going to change that. And just having that mentality and some of the guys going, well, you just don't know. Well, you may not, but I know how I'm going to respond. I know what it's going to take. Well, what I didn't know is day three out of the academy, graduate the academy on Friday, go to work central on Monday. On Wednesday, we get a shooting call. Mesquite is in chase. They're chasing a guy who went into a donut store, the donut store I actually grew up going to, killed the owner of the donut store, went next door, carjacked a lady at the Whataburger directly across from the middle school I grew up going to.
Wow.
Mesquite chases him into Dallas, and, you know, there's officers everywhere.
Day shift.
Yeah, this is 10 o'clock in the morning. And so they said he had exited 30 in Winslow, knew he was going to be in that area. Well, there's a bank right there that has a gated parking lot. Well, he actually goes into this bank, takes a lady hostage because he had wrecked out her car or his car, takes her and gets in her car, and he's in this gated parking lot down at the end just doing donuts.
When y'all pull up?
When we pull up. So it's right on the service road of 30 going into Dallas.
Beautiful neighborhood.
Obviously, you've been there. Yeah, this is liquor store after liquor store after liquor store right there on the highway. And my training officer said, hey, we're going to go around the back, and we're going to come in from the back side. End up going there. There's two cars that are parked there. We're actually standing behind them. He's all the way down at the far end doing donuts in this car. I can see a...
Still has the lady hostage with him.
Still has a lady hostage in the car with him. And I can see a Mesquite officer. He's a detective wearing a red shirt, red polo. Can still see it. He is making his way through the parking lot trying to get down there closer. And the suspect begins driving right towards us. And you know, when you're in those high stress situations, you don't see movies anymore. You see picture, 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 picture. It's not real smooth. And in my mind, what I remember seeing is pulling up my pistol and knowing there's a hostage between me and him as he's coming right by us. And then the next picture is the car's gone and he's jumped out of the car with a pistol and he's at 15 feet. And I remember seeing this red shirt all the way down. In my mind, it was a range guy. Because range guys always wear a red shirt. And having to step out from cover in order to shoot down range to not shoot towards the red shirt.
Not hit the range officer.
And so my third day out of the academy, third day on the street, I ended up shooting and killing a guy that had like 15 different felony arrests, multiple drug arrests, robberies, and now had killed two people.
God.
Multiple officers fired? Were you the only one that fired?
Yeah, I think there was 13 or 17 shots or something like that. One of old heads with his six shot from over 50 yards away. No idea where that round ever went.
With a revolver from 50 yards? Yeah. He was trying to drop one in.
Just lobbing him in there from a long range. But he'd been hit seven times, and four of them were mine because I was the only one on the scene that was shooting a .357.
Four rears. How many did you fire?
Four.
Oh, wow. Third day. Well, that's that Top Gun award.
And it's training when you don't know what you're training for.
Right. Well, and it was very fresh training still at the time.
Absolutely.
Somebody out of the academy who hadn't had that fresh of recent of training and did annual qual once a year where you go out and shoot 50 rounds on a piece of paper may not have been as fresh and prepared.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm sure y'all have been at the range with that guy who hasn't cleaned his pistol in a year.
Yeah. Rusted shut.
Yeah.
Wow.
I never got that. I never said that.
Yep. What does that day go like? What is third day on the job when in freaking heroic stuff, killing a hijacker? How do you process that? Did you realize that quick what had gone on?
You know, I don't, there's no way I understood the magnitude of what just happened. Didn't understand everything that happened in Mesquite. Didn't understand magnitude of everything that happened in that moment. But I remember going and Martin said, hey, go get in the car. Don't talk to anybody. You don't talk to anybody but me. We didn't have mics in the car at that point. Didn't have to worry about any of that. And he said, don't talk to anybody. And I remember getting him on the phone and trying to call my wife and say, I need you to call me. This is going to be on the news. I need you to know I'm okay. And I remember in that moment going, what's wrong with me? Because my whole body's shaking. And it was that adrenaline dump.
Oh, God. Imagine it was a massive dump.
To the, you know, just extreme adrenaline dump. And not knowing if I wanted to yell, not knowing if I needed to cry, not knowing what, I didn't know what was going on with my body in that moment. And your body's just trying to regulate and trying to figure out, well, what are you doing? Because this is such an extreme situation. And talking to my wife, saying, I'm okay. This is going to be on the news.
You got her on the phone.
I was able to get her on the phone and said, don't worry. Everything's okay. She actually called her dad and said, hey, you need to go check on Nick. He gets there. End up having a lawyer show up, walk through everything. Everything was really good in that moment, just thinking, I did everything right. Everything about the shooting, there was no question, like, you know, officers that face today, they're worried about what are the consequences, what's this going to look like. There was none of that. I didn't have to worry about anything. Everything was clean. Everything was good.
Do you have, DPA?
Yes. Yeah. Chris Livingston.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And was your father-in-law your buddy officer?
Yes. Yeah.
That's nice.
That's cool.
That's a good battle buddy to have show up.
Absolutely.
Wow. And Livingston's a great lawyer.
Absolutely. I didn't know I needed a lawyer on day three, but they make sure that you don't leave the academy without one.
Wow. You commented one time about you had a really stable, you were in a really stable place at that time with your marriage, your relationships, your foundation, your faith, your home life, everything. And you said it's still tough. Share a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was in, although a year earlier I had been really struggling with my faith, what I believe about God, I was in a good place in my faith. My marriage was strong. I have an amazing wife. She's actually Dr. Edwards, so she makes more money than me, always has made more money than me, is smarter than I am, and is just a huge blessing to me. She's just rock solid. Everything mentally I was good, emotionally I was stable in life. Everything in my life was good and stable. I didn't have a lot of chaos. Mm-hmm. My parents are in my life. My dad was my best friend. He passed away this last October. I had good, solid foundation of everything around me. And just, you know, you had your 3 days off, going to the range, and then going, oh, man, you're the rookie that killed this guy. And everybody giving you high fives and going, man, you did a good job.
Well, that's unheard of. I imagine you were quite known at the time.
Very quick. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, but over the weeks ahead, I couldn't get the guy's face out of my mind. I still know what he looks like. Still, I remember shot number 2 and 4 hitting him. I can see those rounds hitting him and doing everything right. I mean, this guy is scum. I mean, this guy's the guy that you need to take out, right?
Yeah.
And I did everything right legally. I did everything right procedurally. I did everything right morally. And this is the right thing. And just weighing on me, going, why am I still struggling with this? And why do I feel this weight of what am I going through right now? And, you know, understanding, okay, well, PTSD was coming about during that time. And that was part of it, but just going, what am I supposed to do with this? And not, you know, you have to go see the shrink for one time and going, that's not really the answer, but I still got some things going on within me that I don't really know what to do.
They're just checking a box to say you went.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, and it's unique. You talk about it weighs heavy on you and you try and figure out your faith. My academy class, we had a pastor and somebody went up and asked him if he believed in killing somebody if you needed to. And he said he wasn't sure. So then internally as academy, we're like, well, somebody's shooting at me and you don't murder them back. we're going to have some problems you may need to clear before. If I live, you better leave because we may have a murder circle here if you didn't murder back somebody murdering me.
Yeah.
And it's hard. You know, everybody watches all these TV shows and video games nowadays. But at the end of the day, no matter how justified it is, no matter how big of POS the person is, at the end of the day, it still boils down to that's a human being, and another human being is not built to take, well, people that are conscience and have a heart and have passion, not a serial killer, no matter how bad it is, it's still a human taking another human's life. We're not built to do that normally. And I respected the humility of your statement the other day, saying that your life was completely on solid foundation, and it was still very hard when a lot of law enforcement always don't have all their pillars of their foundation stable in the ground. So they're not getting involved in a critical incident from a position of power because they don't have their feet under them usually. I thought that was super important.
I appreciate that. And it makes you realize, even as stable as you are, this is going to knock you off.
Yeah.
Any solid platform that you have, and just be able to knock you off. And so if you don't have a solid foundation, and just like so many officers who are struggling with life and they're trying to work extra job after extra job and keeping up with the Joneses and everything like that, the stress of all that weighs on top of everything else. And so when you get yourself in a critical incident like this, how are you going to handle it?
Well, and I guess you said something a while ago, you didn't think that you would need an attorney the third day on the job. We just had Robert McCabe on last episode.
One of our attorneys from
here. He's an attorney, great guy, great attorney. And what he said, and Clint says this best, is that we have several times we'll have members call in. This is just kind of a great point to make, is that we have members that may get advice of a situation at work. It may not seem important, and they may give a statement, but they call us. And so what Clint always says, and it's a great way to put it, is that we would rather be involved in the first inning than the ninth. And so back to your point about you didn't think you needed an attorney, most rookies don't think – they see the bigger picture, and yes, it's a serious offense that you – or a serious incident that you just have killed somebody, right? But some departments, even back then in 06, you're not processing like, oh, shit, this is a homicide investigation, right? I mean, you're not processing that. You're like, oh, my, I've just used force. Now there's going to be some – but you got to take yourself out of the equation and actually realize – our profession is under so much scrutiny and war right now. You are now the target of a homicide investigation. Right then and there, pull yourself out of it and get your game face on. Because if you have Travis, Jose Garza, if you have Kim Ogg, what is it, Crizzo
in Dallas?
Jogans. I mean, so when you said that, I just wanted to make sure that our members know that as far as TMPA is concerned, or whatever organization that you are a part of, if you're in doubt, call. We would much rather be involved at the first inning than the ninth. But when he said that, I just wanted to give a shout out.
Yeah, and what I would also tell to your members is there's going to be things that you're going to experience that no one around you in your immediate circle has experienced.
Yeah.
But because y'all cover such a vast area,
yeah,
and cover all the way across the state with 33,000 officers, someone on your team has been there, done that, and can give some wisdom and some advice and some direction.
We had a young Lubbock officer lose a leg in an incident and kind of thought it, life was over, and people were reaching out to us to help. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell a young man that's lost a limb, how to move forward. I can't relate to that. And he didn't want to hear it from me. So we found an officer in North Texas who had lost a leg. It turned into a PT god, became a scratch golfer. So we linked him up and flew that guy to Lubbock.
Yeah, I've still got both mine. I'm not a PT god. I don't know if you were. Go ahead.
He's a PT god. Don't let him fool you. Yeah. But I was like, there's nothing any of us can say to him. But I know one guy that sure can know what to say to him. Something, too, I don't want to miss before my tiny brain forgets it. To our listeners, Nick was talking about when that incident happened, he saw suspect vehicle, then he saw a suspect vehicle with hostage and hostage taker, and then the next thing he saw was suspect in a gun. And I tell people when I teach officer involved shooting classes, you got the old movie reels, and it's all these scenes. And when I would go out and talk to an officer at a scene, he would tell me about this slide, And then there would be like five empty slides. And then he would tell me about this slide. And then he would tell me about this slide. And people talk about tunnel vision and auditory exclusion and narrowing of focus of vision and, you know, adrenaline and the body's desire to protect itself. You have vasoconstriction. All the blood goes to the core of the body. That's when all your fine motor skills kind of start going away. It's when you have the narrowing of the vision. Your hearing is the first thing that goes, when you never hear shots fired. But in that also, your brain is only capturing the most dangerous things. And I'd work a shooting where I'd go out and the guy's like, stopped car, he pulled gun, I shot him. Well, there is so much that happened in between him, but those were the only two major incidents that he could recall at the time.
Yeah. It's the only thing your brain needs to know at that moment.
Yep. Saw bad guy, saw gun, shotgun. I mean, and REM cycles of sleep, for whatever reason, scientifically proven, REM cycles of sleep, REM sleep specific, is when your mind mines those empty slides. And so after at least one cycle, if not two, you will begin to fill in all those slides that are missing. And you may not fill in every single slide. There may be some that'll never come back, but it's interesting to hear it from somebody that's, you know, your education and your background and your faith and how level-headed you are, but it, you just hear it over and over again, and it's flash. Stop the car, he came out with a gun. Well, they forget they approached it. They'd already approached the car twice before he finally stepped out. But for our listeners and out there, your body is going to play tricks. You're going to have reactions. It's involuntary. People ask, well, I'll power through auditory exclusion or I'll power through. It's involuntary reactions that your body has. This is going to happen.
Yeah, and you need to know that's okay. You need to know that that's normal. That you only saw slide one and five.
Yeah.
And to understand you're not missing something. Something's not wrong with your brain. But sleep is how your brain recovers. And being able to sleep. And when guys work double shifts and double shifts and double shifts and you've slept a total of 9 hours in 4 days, your brain's not at your best. Yep. And so your reaction times are slow and everything about you is slow. So being able to take care of your brain is as important as making sure you're in the gym. I'm not going to the gym anytime soon, but at least in theory.
But yeah. Legally, after your critical incident, you need that REM cycle of sleep.
Absolutely.
So that your memory can recall as accurately and factually as possible. But what most of us do is go home and start drinking alcohol, which scientifically affects REM sleep. So if you go home and drink after a critical incident, you're intentionally submarining your ability to repair your brain, to recall the facts that you need to fill those slides in. So then when you go to IA with your attorney the next day or 2 days later, and you've been schnockered for 24 hours, you've submarined possibly your own legal case to help defend yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's really good. Just in being able to understand that process and what that looks like, being able to have someone who can go, this is normal for you to feel this way. You can't get rid of the auditory exclusion. It's going to happen. I remember hearing one shot, and it was actually one of the guys had a rifle, and while the guy was still driving, clipped the side mirror, shot him in the shoulder. That's the only shot I remember hearing. But I remember seeing bullet two and four hit him. And bullet four, he was actually already fallen to the ground and actually hit him in his side when he was squared up to me. And I remember wondering, are they going to ask why you shot him on the ground? And going, that's lag time. You have nothing. There's nothing you can do about that. Right. Your brain's not fast enough to tell you to stop.
Right.
But in that moment going, what is that going to look like? What's that going to look like when they go, well, why is this one in the side and the other three in the front? What happened? And just creating doubts in your own mind.
Well, and you bring up another good point about it's okay to deal with however you deal with it. Well, not alcohol or drugs, but, you know, I would pull up to a scene and an officer would be mad. Like, why did he make me do that? Why? I pulled up and guys have been sad. You know, I did not want to kill the guy. He made me kill. I didn't want to kill the guy. However you deal with it, that's just how you deal with it. And it's okay. And, you know, I've been through critical incidents myself, and that's one of the biggest things that I struggle with and can damage yourself and others is trying to figure out that you need to grieve a certain way or judging why somebody else doesn't grieve a certain way. Because how somebody navigates, I've shown up to shootings and seen every emotion under the sun from, I'm good. He pulled a gun, so I'm good. I'm just ready to grab a bite to eat. To sad, to mad, to
throwing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. My partner who did 3 tours in Iraq, because I had gone through this situation, he was willing to be my partner later. But every time we had a high stress situation, once everything was calm, he'd walk over and throw up because that's his adrenaline dump.
Oh, wow.
He did have a system.
He had a system and was going, all right, I got it. You're good.
And, wow.
But that was how his body processed it. And so everyone's going to process those things different and being okay for how your body processes.
Yeah. And at least that's a healthy way for him to process it rather than, you know, going and down in a airplane bottle of vodka or.
Oh, he had plenty of other unhealthy habits, but that one was a good one.
Okay.
Sounded good. I am curious. I don't know if it was you or somebody else we had this discussion for. You know, consuming alcohol, it does affect your sleep, like, negatively. I mean, and I've never, but me and my wife talked about this the other day, the differences of alcohol affect mine differently.
Different kinds of alcohol affect you differently?
Well, see, I know where you're going with this, and I don't appreciate it. We're not talking about Angel's Envy again. Yes.
Okay. I was trying to lead you down a path.
You are trying to lead me down a path, and I'm not going for it. You're trying to hook me. What I was saying is that, like, if I was to have beer or wine or whiskey, like, my sleep's lighter or deeper, and I don't know why that is. So,
what about Rohypnol?
God.
So I think what he was recalling a couple episodes ago, we had somebody, I think it was Grimaldi.
Yes, it was Grimaldi.
And we were talking about people go, I drink alcohol to help me sleep. And alcohol actually metabolizes as sugar.
Yeah.
Like 3 to 4, I think it takes 3 to 4 hours. Yeah. And so you think at 9 when you're half schnockered, you're sleepy. But then 3 or 4 hours later, when it's metabolized into sugar, that's why you wake up at 1:30 or 2 and don't sleep very good the rest of the night, because now you've got a sugar high going.
Yeah. Well,
and it's not about don't have a drink, but that can't be your answer.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah, 100%. I agree with that.
Yeah, and the problem if you try to use that as your coping mechanism is it's very –
Well, it's a depressant, one. So if you're already depressed as it is and you're taking a depressant, it's going to make you – more depressed.
And I'm a wine guy. I love to have a nice ribeye and a glass of red wine. Mm-hmm. But if that's your coping mechanism, it's very easy for 1 to become 2.
And then 2 to become 6. Well,
hell, 4 is good. I mean, 4 is good. And I think it needs to be – I'm a foodie, and that's why I like a glass of wine as a foodie. But if once it becomes a crutch, I think it's a slippery slope that never ends well. Yep. But learning – I've realized now I don't sleep good. I don't sleep good – I've always wondered why when I drink, I don't sleep good. And learning a couple of years ago, that's why I don't. I'm a one drink guy.
Well,
because I need sleep. I'm fat and old, and I need sleep, and I don't want to be up from 2 o'clock on.
And I guess my point, and I'm just going to throw it out there because we're family, is that my dad struggled with alcoholism. In fact, he died from cirrhosis. And so I've always kind of carefully looked at, like, the intake of alcohol. Now, me and Janet call ourselves the weekend warriors. I mean, it's very seldom that we have, you know, a lot of alcohol during the week. If it is, we have like a whiskey Wednesday or wine Wednesday or whatever. But I've always kind of been conscientious of how much alcohol I do intake because I'm scared that I'm going to fall in my dad's footsteps. Love my dad, my best friend. He's my best man at my wedding. And I wish he was here with me today. He had a sickness and it is what it is. But he did not lack on sleep. He did not lack on sleep whatsoever. So
if you want to scare yourself to death, pull up Huberman Lab. Mm-hmm. It's probably about a year ago. You watch Huberman? Watch Huberman Lab.
A show?
It's a podcast. Pull up Huberman Lab and Google the alcohol episode. It's probably an hour and a half long. And he goes through, he's a caveman. He's a big old dude, caveman type guy. So he talks it on our level, but he gives the scientific
Like a Neanderthal?
Explanation.
Is that where you're going with that, Clint?
Kind of.
Okay.
That's what my 23andMe says I am, is Neanderthal. But he breaks down scientifically what alcohol does to the body as the decades go on, and it will scare you to death to listen to that podcast.
Oh, wow.
About the continuing deterioration of the brain and
of like everyday drinks.
Yeah. And just like what one drink a day does, or what seven drinks a week does, or, you know, I mean, he just breaks it all down of what it does to your brain, and the brain doesn't ever recover really or heal from that. I guess you pickle it, but it is scary to listen to.
Not be good for me and you with starting off at a lower level than most. So
it is scary to listen to.
Well, and you get in the pattern of it.
Yeah.
That's your go-to coping mechanism. And the deal is, it's not just the extreme critical incidents. It's all the craziness that you see.
Yeah.
I used to tell people, I don't have to make up stories. I can't make up these stories. I'm not creative enough to make up the kind of stories that we see and the things that you experience on the streets. And so if that becomes your go-to forever crazy incident, I mean, it's why, you know, there's a crash on the highway and guys are smoking and joking and laughing over there in the corner because they don't want to deal with it. So how do you escape? Well, after work, you escape by having that drink. And
well, and it's funny you say that. Policing and alcohol kind of go hand in hand. I mean, So before Dad did pass away, is that if we did have a get together and somebody did not participate in drinking, I would give them a ration of shit and I would just be really hard on them. I mean, for no reason. And so maybe they're going through something that I don't know. Maybe they're trying to have a lifestyle change. Maybe they watched that podcast that you're mentioning. And so I recognized it after Dad passed, and Janet actually called me out on it. I'm thankful for my wife because she does call my BS when it needs to be called out. But I guess the listener,
thank you, Janet.
To the watcher out there, or viewer, is that if you've got a friend that's in the pack that's joining you guys for a night out and he's not participating in drinking, don't be that asshole and call him out and encourage him. Just leave it alone. If he wants to have a glass of tea and you have water, grapefruit, and a glass of milk like Clint does every once in a while, then let him do it.
Amen.
That's actually being a good friend.
That's right. I heard this the other day, and it was from some friends of ours in Wimberley. And she said, friendship's like a candle. And she said, you want somebody that wants to guard your flame, but you also want somebody that's not there to blow it out. And I thought about that for like 2 or 3 days after the fact. It's pretty neat. You're going to say something smart.
No.
I see it in your face.
No. As a young guy, Garland, I used to hear people asking people, are you a rope holder? And I didn't know what it meant. And after I'd been on a little bit, a guy said, if I was dangling off the side of a cliff and there was only about 4 feet of rope and you were holding me, are you going to just say, hey, man, this is burning my hands a little bit, I'm going to have to let go? Are you going to hold it until your hands are bloody, sopping wet, and the rope finally slides through with the blood, or you get pulled over with me? Or are you just going to pretty quickly let go because you're just tired and it doesn't feel very good on your hands? I was like, woo.
Wow.
He said, because I want somebody out here going on a call with me that's a rope holder.
Yeah.
You need to let me know if you're a rope holder. I was like,
good point.
Ooh.
That's okay. A good word right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So that's a heck of a way to start a police career, 3 days on the job. That's like winning the Super Bowl as a rookie. Super Bowl MVP as a rookie. Where do you go from there?
So I ended up working Southeast. Did patrol for a while. Ended up being on a burglary task force for about a year and a half. We ended up making like 250 felony arrests in 1 year.
Oh, wow.
By doing warrants for burglaries and robbery warrants, and really good. We had a great team, being able to run warrants, learned a lot during that process, really created a very solid team. After doing that for a couple of years, just realizing I've got something else planned for my life, and I'm not really sure what that looks like. I know this isn't the end, but for me, I think I even remember one of my high school coaches wrote a letter of recommendation to me, and he said, Nick's one of the most coachable players I've ever had. And having that mindset of, I always want to be coachable. I always want to learn. I always want to grow. I always want to be better.
I like
that. And so after every time we ran a warrant, I always wanted to think, what went good? What went bad? Yep. But we don't ever stop for that. We just go to the next one, right? What went good in this incident? What can we grow in this incident? How can we go back and watch film and go, hey, there's things we should have done different for our protection.
Or we just fluff each other and don't really talk about truthful bad things. Hey, we just go, man, that was awesome. Yeah. We kicked ass. We don't break down the bad part.
Yeah. Instead of going, no, dude, that house was dark and you didn't have your flashlight with you.
Yep.
What the heck?
Yeah. And on your point, executive level leadership, chiefs, sheriffs, or executive management can be coached.
Oh, absolutely.
By mid and lower level.
He does executive coaching, and that's one of the things that I've enjoyed getting to know Nick about is just because you have executive in your title doesn't mean you're done learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a business to do life leadership and business coaching. It's called My Leadership Coach, myleadershipcoach.org. And I was on a flight about a –
right here.
Thank you for that. Yeah. I was on a flight about a year ago. It was actually last March. I was going to Florida, sat next to this lady, and she's reading a leadership book that I knew, that I actually taught. And I thought, oh, here's a potential client, right? And I'm seeing this as a sales opportunity. So I started asking her, what do you do? And she said, well, I work for this company, and I manage finances. And I said, well, tell me more. And I'm just kind of digging in and keep on pressing. She goes, well, I manage all my clients are $500 million and up.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I went, okay, I'm outside of my league on this one, right? Really quick. $500 million and up. And I said, well, tell me. She goes, well, what do you do? So she started asking questions. I was telling her, and I said, do y'all have coaching? And she goes, what mid-level organizations don't understand is everyone on my level has an executive coach. It's part of your contract. It's not negotiable. You will have a personal coach that you will meet with 25 to 30 times a year.
Wow.
And so she said, companies that do over $100 million that have big accounts, that's not optional because they understand that leadership has to grow for the business to grow. And so they're
constantly
always,
grow.
Absolutely.
Perpetually. Yeah. I like that.
That's good.
So, well, you wouldn't think that really as an outsider looking in, you'd think, well, those people think, oh, we're the top of the top, but nobody's going to coach me on anything. Really contrary to what you would think.
But you look at the very top of the Tiger Woods in his heyday or a quarterback or whatever, they all have a specific coach for that specific thing, even at their very best.
Yeah, Tiger carried that guy from McKinney, Hank Haney, with him pretty much his entire career, I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's good. Good stuff.
Tom Brady or whoever that is.
Yeah.
They have coaches that are not just the coach that's hired by the Patriots or whoever, but they have a coach that's coaching them outside of that as well. To help them be at their very best.
Was there something specific at the end of your time at DPD that you thought, man, I've got something bigger to challenge me? Was there a specific day, moment that you realized, I think I'm about to close this chapter and move to the next? Or was it just, I'm ready to try something new?
I didn't know what that was. I didn't like have a specific time, and there wasn't like a moment. I was doing some work in my church part-time and just trying to help out, and they actually offered me a position. And so I didn't know that was coming, but I was preparing, and I was beginning to reach out and just going, I want to be able to grow and get better. And I think what pushed me in that is the 250 felony arrests in a year, doing the different things, being part of things in South Dallas, Pleasant Grove. Those things were never as scary as being in the station because of the lack of leadership.
Yeah, that's scary. That's a hell of a statement.
Yeah.
That you're more likely to get stabbed in the back.
In the police station than on the street.
Yeah. And so leaders have to get better.
Yeah.
And you hear it in this day and time, day after day after day. My dad's 34 years at DPD. That would never have happened. And in this day and time, for our listeners, what he's saying is, in this day and time, more often, it's more dangerous to be in the police station than it is on the street. And that's so unfortunate.
Because we eat our own, too.
If you're a sergeant or up, your job is to protect your guys. Your job is to put them in a position that they're not worried about how something goes down, that they're not worried about what you're going to say, but they're worried making sure that you have their back. And so making sure they have everything they need to be successful, to be safe, to be on the street. And don't, I know there's policies and procedures in place for everywhere, but don't major on things that are just BS. Don't always harp on things that, hey man, those aren't the right boots.
Major in the minor things.
Yeah. And you get on to your troops for, hey man, your boots are dirty today. And you're going, do you know where I was yesterday? We were chasing a guy through a creek. Yeah. My boots are still dirty.
Yep.
And doing everything you can to help morale. I mean, people are leaving law enforcement faster than we can handle right now. Yep. Whether it's teachers or law enforcement or whatever career, morale's at a low.
For public service.
Absolutely. So to work for a boss that's a jerk, that's just an easier exit.
Yeah. Well,
last time I checked, being nice is completely free.
Well, and you just
every day.
You just reminded me one of the best memes. People don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad bosses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's cool to our listeners how I met Nick. My son was going to a church. He called. He's like, hey, I'm going to start going to this church in Forney. Sounds good. Him and his buddies would go up there on Wednesdays and hang out, and came home talking about Nick and was fired up to go to church on Wednesday nights for several years. Well, then came home one day and was a little less enthusiastic about it. So I get to inquiring what's going on. Well, I found out Nick, this mysterious Nick, left. Well, then I see in the paper that Forney ISD was bringing on board a spiritual leader or athletic spiritual leader. Yeah.
Director of staff and family services to be able to do some leadership development, help to influence kids, be able to bring some mentorship programs to the district.
And so what's cool is when all the rest of America is complaining that you shouldn't have anything to do with church and school and sports and all these other problems in America. On Friday morning, my boy plays high school football. On Friday morning, they have prayer breakfast. They play football Friday night. Saturday morning, they get back up and they go watch film. And then they have Brotherhood brunch. And Nick is there throughout all of this as a positive role model, as a leader. We'll talk about it a little bit. It just means so much to me when you keep reading all these guys better not kneel on the football field and say a prayer, and they better not. And clearly in our hometown, thank God for right now, we're on the forefront of it and demanding that it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Really blessed to be in this situation. So I guess I've been in the district for a year and a half now as an official capacity, but I've been doing this mentorship for 6 years. And so being able to show up practices, be there on Friday mornings, we talk about leadership. We talk about what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to think beyond yourself? What does it mean to sacrifice for your team? That it's not just about you, that it's not, this is you and the rest of the world just revolves around you. And mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a man and to grow? To be on the sideline with them during the game, to be there when the season's over, everybody's going, dang, that sucks. And every senior cries that last game, right? And just going, man, I've walked this journey with you. I've seen how you've grown from a sophomore to a junior to a senior. Man, God's got good plans for you. Keep walking. Just keep going. This isn't that your football career may be over, but there's bigger things to come. And just really being able to speak life. And then being able to bring other men into these boys' life. And they need good men. And so wherever you are, whatever small town you're in, man, find a way to invest in the young men in your town.
And I love Friday morning prayer breakfast. And I love Brock is not a morning riser. He wants to be there on Saturday morning for Brotherhood brunch.
And those guys do a good job. Yeah, just providing breakfast all on the Booster Club. They come in and make sure these kids are fed, make sure that they are there and they have everything they need to be ready for the next week.
Awesome. Yep, that's cool. So I was sad to hear that Brock was upset about the guy leaving his church. But when I found out the guy was at his school now, I was like, that's cool. He's not at that church anymore. He's at your school. So I'm really solid with that.
Yeah. Man, Clint, your son's just a good kid. And there's so many kids that they just need someone other than they need dad. Don't make any mistake.
But they need a secondary male figure. That's not, yeah.
That I'm echoing the same thing he's saying.
Yeah.
That I'm reinforcing that it's not just dad saying this. Yeah.
Well, we've always had that moment where, like, you know, Clint is telling me the same thing my dad's telling me because it's Clint and not my dad, I'm going to listen to Clint
a little bit,
you know, more. So it's probably the same thing.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Brock years ago was a pitcher and he got in a funky deal for a while where he would step out instead of stepping at the plate. He would step out. Well, then it would throw.
Right.
He was throwing weird. And so for a couple of practices, I tried to talk to him and I don't know, he's 10 or 12 or something, but he was already kind of in that stage of dad absolutely knows nothing. So I talked to him about it for several practices. Well, the coach pulled me aside. He's like, dude, Brock's pitching's kind of gone sideways. I said, well, I know. He goes, you see what he's doing, don't you? I said, no, I've talked to him about it. He's like, well, you need to talk to him about it. I was like,
I've tried.
Brother, I've tried like freaking five practices in a row. He's like, okay. I said, by all means. Literally, coach walks up to him. He's like, hey, Brock, you're stepping out when you pitch. Step at the batter like you've always done it. So you're literally, he started doing it right then and he was right back on track. Coach looks at me and I'm like, I have no idea it came from you. Dad couldn't possibly.
And that's not a failure of dad.
No.
Dad's doing everything he can. You just need more men.
No, it's to your point.
Yeah.
Everybody giving the same message.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And dads don't know anything.
It takes a village to raise a kid.
It's tough.
100%.
Yeah. I laughed a joke when I was, when I was 14, my dad was the dumbest person I'd ever met. And when I turned 21, I was shocked to see how much he'd learned in 7 years.
Yeah. Yep. Well, did we touch everything that you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, I think so. I was wanting to hit a couple things with you, though. How old are you now?
45.
What would 45-year-old Nick say to 16-year-old Nick?
Learn everything you can from anyone you can. Learn as much from every single person, even if you think they're a dumbass. Learn something from them.
Yeah, you may learn what not to do.
Solid advice, yeah.
Learn something from everyone you encounter and never stop learning.
What is Nick's very, very best day and what's Nick's worst day?
I think my best day is when I, doing this leadership coaching, when I invest in someone and I see them get it and see them, they have done the work and they're reaping the benefits and they're getting joy out of their work now that they feel like they're in a hole. They're not sure how to take that next step. But when I invest in someone and they begin to light up because they're growing, from a professional point of view, any day with my wife is a good day. She is absolutely amazing. Couldn't do it without her. Incredibly supportive, so she's always my best. You said you left and your wife was home for a few days while you were traveling. Yeah. My wife leaves Friday for 8-day cruise with her mom, and so I got all the kids for spring break.
That means they're excited because mom would be because they know daddy don't play. And I don't look at the card. I actually used your what is it called when you can't think back during a shooting? I just lost train of thought. Your body, the blood goes to your chest.
Vasoconstriction.
Yeah. What's the other one?
Critical incident amnesia.
Maybe. Anyway, the other day I spent some money that I wasn't supposed to. And so Janet came in there and she said, hey, like, really? What? You didn't tell me about this? And I was like, Clint's got this saying for this in like major instances. And I can't remember what the word is, but it's that. She was like, what the hell are you talking about? And I was like, if something happened with cops when we get in shootings, and I'm sorry, I should have told you about that. You have to ask about that.
I don't remember why I spent it. Who are you?
Yeah. I said, you're going to have to ask me in 72 hours, and I get a full suit.
I need to go to bed.
Yeah, that did not go over real well. So, anyway. Hey, we like to end each episode with three rapid-fire questions. Because you guys are friends and because you're DPD, you're probably going to answer this in the in McNear favor. But we'll see. You ready? Did you study for them?
I do not know these questions.
Okay. First, question number one. Favorite drink of choice, or if you do drink, just whatever drink it is. Second is favorite line from a cop movie, or your favorite cop movie. And third is the favorite cop car.
Oh, gosh. Favorite drink, Diet Coke or Jack and Coke.
Okay.
What was the second one?
Favorite line from a cop movie or your favorite cop movie?
Oh, gosh.
And Die Hard Christmas, and Die Hard King Camp. Not for Christmas.
I was going to go Die Hard. The movie's Training Day.
Training Day.
Training Day is good. That's a good movie. Denzel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kills it.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite cop car?
Well, I know what my least favorite car. Can I answer that way?
Yeah.
So for a while we had some 05 Impalas, and I don't know if you can see it. There's a scar right there.
Oh,
I
yeah.
40 stitches put in my head.
I'm listening. It was a Chevrolet, and, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Chevy Impala, 05, no brakes, yeah. No power.
Yeah, piece of crap.
Yeah, that is by far, and you put a cage in it.
Yeah, they're not, they're junk.
Yeah, so
what's your favorite?
I guess at the end we drove Challengers or
Chargers.
Chargers, yeah, Chargers.
Okay.
Dodge.
Just a little bit bigger, a little bit more room. Fat guy.
She'd take a Dodge over Crown Vic.
We did have some Crown Vics that... you know, they had all gas and no brakes.
Yeah, no brakes. Yeah, we're not good cars.
kind of drove like a boat.
Definitely like a boat.
Yeah.
Like a sinking boat. Like the Titanic,
oh
I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway. So he's a Crown Vic guy. And I'm a Caprice guy.
100%. Okay. All the way.
I have one last question. There is this scary character that Tyler and I have met in the last couple of years that we hope you've never come across. Scary.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever have to come across a guy named Joe King?
Yeah, so...
Was he shirtless when you met him?
No, I don't think so. So
pantless. Probably didn't have pants on. If he had a shirt on, he didn't have pants on.
100%. That's probably likely. No, I got off training. I did training at Central.
There you go.
They sent me to Southeast first day off training. And I walk in, and there's a guy named Brian Emerson, who I actually went to high school with. And I said, "Hey, Brian." He goes, "Man, what are you doing here?" I said, "I just got off training. I'm here." He goes, "Well, you can ride with me." Well, I didn't know I was about to ride with him and Joe and that whole squad.
Oh, man.
And so I got indoctrinated into South Dallas really quick.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Shout out to Joe King.
Just absolutely. A couple of sessions of counseling help you get past Joe King. How do you get past Joe King?
It's been years.
Years.
It's been years, yeah.
We can talk about maybe we can go same counselor. I'm still trying to get past Joe King. Shout out Joe King.
Great guy. Great officer.
Oh, my gosh.
And really does care for the guys. I think he's part of that wellness team. He's part of Dallas.
Yep. And the ATO podcast. He's got a podcast out there that's absolutely phenomenal. So
That OWL unit is killing it, what they're doing for cops.
Absolutely.
Yep. Shout out Joe King. We love you, brother.
Well, when this episode drops, it's going to be D-Day for voting. Hopefully we'll have some good news out of all the elections that we've got going on, specifically in Travis County. And we've got some other issue or some other problems going on across the state with the, I think already identified the actual name of the fire up in the Panhandle, Cedar Creek or something.
Prayers. 500,000 acres burning
right now. Yeah, I think it's probably gonna get worse. We've got two field reps headed that way, so our thoughts and prayers are with those affected by that, not just our members but the civilians as well and all law enforcement involved. You know, it's time and time again it shows that we run towards danger. Last year Eastland County I believe lost one involved in a fire. So again, you just never know kind of how and when law enforcement is going to get, you know, involved with natural disasters and wildfires. Seems to be not something I was ever involved with in East Texas, but it's a common occurrence there in West Texas and Central Texas. So
if you were a listener and you're not in law enforcement and you're in a leadership position or working at a corporation that needs some corporate coaching, some communications coaching, or if you're in law enforcement and you're in a leadership position, potentially in a leadership position, and want some executive coaching or want someone to come in and talk about effective communication, professional communication, how would they reach you, sir?
Nick@myleadershipcoach.org.
Nick@myleadershipcoach.org.
Drop it right there.
He'll put it right there.
Yeah, I'll put it right there.
All right.
We appreciate you guys. Appreciate what y'all do. Appreciate your investment into just the law enforcement community and just making sure guys are healthy, they're safe, and really there for them and some of their worst days.
Yeah.
That goes both ways, man. You've done more for my little community than you could possibly know.
Thank you.
It's awesome.
That is. That's all I got.
All right. Well, you guys stay safe. This about wraps this all up. Take care. God bless you. And as always, may God bless Texas. We're out.